Here's a chance to hear the greatest insights from the world's top thinkers on intimacy and relationships. Blend them with the struggles of everyone who's in the trenches trying to work it out in their dating lives and their relationship lives. And put these together and sift them through a very incredible mind. Then this is the chance to do that. Today I'm going to be interviewing Hara Morano, the editor-at-large of Psychology Today and the author of Psychology Today's advice column. So stay tuned to the Deeper Dating Podcast.
If you've ever been disillusioned, disappointed, or discouraged in your search for love, and you know there has to be a better way to find the healthy, soul-filling love you've always longed for, then you've discovered the podcast for you. I know, as Ken's work personally has led me to find the love of my life. So here's your host of Deeper Dating, Ken Page.
Hello, and welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm Ken Page, and today I'm going to be interviewing Hara Morano, the editor-at-large of Psychology Today and the author of Psychology Today's advice column. And she's got tons of fascinating information for everybody interested in the subject of intimacy, dating, and love. Every week, I'm going to share with you the greatest tools I know to help you find love and keep it flourishing and heal your life in the process, because the skills of dating are nothing more than the skills of love. And the skills of love are the greatest skills of all for a happy life. You can also find the whole transcript of this episode on deeperdatingpodcast.com. And if you're interested in learning more about my work and applying these ideas to your own intimacy journey, you can learn lots more by going to deeperdatingpodcast.com. You'll get a free gift of an ebook of mine, and you'll learn more about all the things I'm doing, the work that I think other people are doing that might inspire you as well, and you'll be on my mailing list. I also want to say that everything I share in this podcast is educational. It's not medical or psychiatric advice or treatment for any emotional, physical, or psychological condition. And if you're experiencing any serious psychological or psychiatric conditions, please seek professional help. And by the way, if you like what you're learning here, it would be a fabulous gift if you could subscribe on iTunes and leave me a review. Thanks to everyone who's left such amazing reviews, and thank you for doing that too if you haven't yet. So, Hara, welcome to the Deeper Dating Podcast. I'm just so delighted to have you here.
And I'm always delighted to talk to you. Well, you have such a deep understanding of issues and such a thoughtful take on everything that it's always a pleasure to chat with you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And your role, and why I'm super excited about having you on this podcast, is because there are very, very few people to talk about intimacy in a way that who are positioned like you are, because you are the editor-at-large of Psychology Today, and you write consistently some of the most important features on relationships and intimacy. And you're speaking with the most thoughtful, insightful, brilliant thought leaders around about all aspects of relationships, sexuality, and intimacy. That's one level. On another level, you are the advice columnist for Psychology Today with your column, Unconventional Wisdom. So you are hearing from the trenches and have for 15 years about what people go through in their intimacy journeys. And then finally, you are someone who is in a wonderful relationship yourself, and you have many friends and people you love who are in all different phases of relationship. So there's the personal as well. And I want to tap you on all those different levels in this podcast.
Well, I'll be happy to report from all of them. You know, they all come out of one mouth. So I see with one set of eyes on in all those different domains, and all my thoughts come out of one mouth. So you'll be hearing from me on all of those rolled into one ball.
That's right. Filtered and synthesized through your heart, your mind, and your eyes. So great. Can I ask you the first question then?
Please jump in.
I guess the first thing that I want to ask you is, what are you noticing from the trenches as the kind of key struggles that single people who are looking for a relationship are experiencing?
Wow, so many thoughts come to mind. You know, I think that there are at least two that I'd like to talk about.
Great.
And one of them is that I think people increasingly, and I'm getting this primarily from the questions that come into my column and conversations directly with all kinds of other people in my life, direct conversations, that increasingly people aren't really clear on what a relationship is. And they don't understand that a relationship, first and foremost, must be mutual. There must be a mutuality of respect, of consideration of needs. I hear from so many people who simply like another person and assume from that that they're going to be paid attention to in the way that they want. They're frustrated. It sets up a really bad dynamic in a relationship. And I just hear this from so many people. Now, I suspect, because it's so much more common among young people, that it has something to do with the development of social media and online contact, that they've lost some basic threads of relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing I see, and this is, I can guarantee you, a very direct result of social media, is that people are really, really struggling with a lot of ambiguity in relationships, ambiguous signals. And this is definitely a result of the fact that online media makes it very easy to avoid the real emotional labor that has to go on in a relationship. So people just cut their losses and they end a relationship by ghosting, and you have no idea why a relationship ended, which creates all kinds of ambiguity, anxiety. You have no way to grow for the next relationship. And you never learn how to handle all the difficulties that come up in relationships because you just hit the off button.
That's right. It makes it so easy to flee. Just be out of there like it never happened.
Right. Or to just avoid anything in any way through electronic communication. So that's a real problem that people are struggling with, and it consumes a huge amount of emotional energy.
I think that's so true. Energy that could be used elsewhere.
Could be used elsewhere for a million things in one's life and for the relationship itself.
Yes, exactly. I mean, the whole thing of like ending a relationship by texting. And you brought up such a huge point. And I think that a lot of that cowardice is just decency without a backbone. Because people run and they flee because they don't want to hurt people. They don't want to be the one doing damage. But they do more damage by not crafting the words to explain what's going on for them. It's a kind of betrayal to just leave like that. And you're right, it's absolutely rampant. But it's betrayal, and it shuts people's hearts down and makes them go into the game of dating with very shut down hearts and with a lot of self-protection, which is not the greatest way to enter into a new relationship.
No, and I think that if you like or love someone, you owe it to them to explain why a relationship isn't working for you. Number one, it gives the person the opportunity to repair, but it also gives the person the opportunity to do whatever they need to do for themselves, or look out for certain problems in their next relationship.
It's so true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a grave concern.
Definitely. I mean, and I just think that everyone at the end of a relationship, look, here's the thing about dating. Dating is, by definition, a trial and error process.
Yes.
You're trying to find a good fit. There's never going to be a perfect fit, but you're trying to find a good fit where lots of things work together. And what that means is that there are going to be a lot of breakups. You know that intellectually before you even enter the process. So people ought to have enough respect for each other, and especially someone they liked or loved. And at the end of the relationship, after the immediate pain is gone, sit down with each other and explain why it didn't work, what needs weren't met, what feelings arose, what developments in life intervened. I just think it's so necessary to know what's happening instead of spending eons guessing, being confused about, worrying over, and destroying, before it even begins, another relationship, because it creates so much anxiety, and often people are walking on eggshells, afraid they're going to get rejected again because there was no clarity in leaving the prior relationship.
Yeah. And that's a really hard place. And I know it personally really well. It's that place where, on one hand, you're judging yourself and thinking, I must be really screwed up that someone like this just couldn't even like talk to me, couldn't be with me, had to leave me, rejected me. And then on the other hand, there's so much anger, like, what an asshole that this person did it this way. And neither of those are particularly, they're both understandable, but they're not particularly generative.
Not at all.
Yeah, you leave everyone stuck.
And then what happens with that anger is that it generalizes to like the whole class
of that gender. Yes.
Right.
Or that age group or that profession. Yeah.
Right. And then the wondering about oneself turns into insecurity, which is just the least attractive element in a relationship.
I think that is so true. And I just have to kind of make a call out here. And that is that this is a call out to maturity that we're talking about for everyone who wants to end a relationship, to do it in a way that's kind and caring and honest and authentic, taking the time to craft those really difficult words, and then doing it not by text. And then the other piece that I just want to say to everybody who has had this done to them, you have a right to get the other person to say to them, I really want you to sit down with me and talk to me. I really feel like I deserve that. And I'm asking this of you. I want a clear understanding of what happened. I deserve that after this time together. People are afraid to do that, but in this world and in this culture, you have a right to do that. You may not get it, but you have a right to ask for that strongly.
You know, I actually did that in a relationship. This goes back about, I would say about 17 years. I was dating someone casually. I knew he was not going to be a permanent feature of my life. He persuaded me to go out with him. He was 10 years younger than I was. A lovely guy. We had some wonderful times together. And then abruptly broke it off. And I never heard from him. And then about 6 or 7 years later, I got an email from him. He was in his dentist's office. He picked up the Daily News. My advice column was then carried by the Daily News. And he used that, seeing that as an occasion to shoot me an email. And I wrote him back and I said, you know what? Before we exchange another word, you know, we really liked each other. We had some good times. We knew it was never going to go anywhere. You owe me an explanation. And we've been good friends ever since.
Oh, so fabulous. And yes, we do have a right to do that. Hara, I'm going to move on because I'm going to hit a number of different points. And hopefully in the future, I can have you on again so we could drill the hell down into these different things. But I'm going to move on to my next question for you.
Okay.
And that is, it's the same question, and it's for people who are in relationships. What do you see as being the biggest struggles from the trenches that people are experiencing and reporting on and asking for help with these days?
Wow. Well, I think that one of the big things everyone is struggling with is gender roles. I don't care what gender you are, what gender you want to be, where you are on gender identity. The culture is in transition. Everybody's in transition. Everybody's got different templates of what they learned, what they need, and everyone is just struggling.
It's so true. Yes.
And, you know, one of the ways it comes out is exemplified in this article I just published in Psychology Today on affairs. And in this article, I talked to a psychologist and a leading divorce lawyer in New York who are seeing like the cutting edge of splitsdom. In couples. And one of the things they're seeing is that New York may be a little unusual and maybe a little ahead of the rest of the country, but here's a phenomenon. We all know that women, maybe at least 50% of women, are making as much as or more than men are these days. And in New York, there are really some very high power, high earning women. And they're in relationships, in marriages, where they've made a conscious decision with their partner based on needs and everyday needs and everyday realities, where the woman is an even higher earner than her high-earning husband. So they together make the decision where he's going to stay home with the kids and she's going to go out there and conquer the universe. And so these couples are making a decision based on their own everyday needs. And what happens is that the women wind up in affairs that destroy the marriage. And it turns out that the women lose interest in their partners because they're not fulfilling the template of what a man is, that ingrained template that they got growing up, that the culture gives all of us before we're even aware that we're receiving all these messages.
Yeah.
So these women, these couples founder on sort of the transitional templates of gender. And in the many couples where that's not the extreme case, couples are just having arguments over and over again about gender roles and what each person does and how they contribute. And every couple is reinventing the wheel and devoting enormous amounts of energy to solving this problem in their own household.
Yeah, there is just so much in this. One thing I just want to jump in and say kind of on a high level is that something I see again and again in dating, in relationships, in my own relationship, in my own life, is that there's an ongoing necessity for rewiring. And that is hard work, rewiring the ways you've been built to be attracted, engage, relate. And that rewiring that becomes necessary as you grow is really hard work. And now you're talking about a giant cultural rewiring. It's so sad because these women are, and these men in these relationships are being heroes. They're letting go of old gender roles and they're going with what's new, what's wise, makes sense. And then it bites them in the butt. And it's so poignant. And of course, it doesn't mean that the toothpaste has to go back in the tube. But it means that, like, as a culture, we're on the edge of this incredibly difficult process.
I know. How do you envision couples doing the necessary rewiring?
I think that it's all about hard conversations done in a loving way, because I just think again and again, and I'm going to talk about my relationship with Greg, my husband, again and again, we come to junctures that just seem like, well, the earth is going to end here. Like, we're in a precipice. We ain't going to figure this one out. And Greg's so good. He always says, we always figure these things out. We'll figure this one out. And somehow in the act of communicating, and in, this is something you've talked about with me personally, Hara, your belief about the importance of bringing goodwill into relationships. In the presence of that kind of goodwill, somehow new worlds open up. The rewiring happens by both parties getting vulnerable and saying, I love you, I care, and I am stuck as all hell. What do we do? And we rewire in real time in those conversations, not alone in our heads, but in real time in the context of the relationship. But man, it's hard. And I wonder in those relationships, like, do you feel in those relationships, if you can comment on this, that the husband and wife were too shy and too embarrassed to talk about this, particularly the wife, or did they have extensive conversations where they tried to work this through? Or somewhere in between?
In the couples of which I was made aware, the partners did not have the extensive conversations. They acted to create an inevitability, the end of the relationship, on their own without having the conversation. In other words, they avoided the conversation. And what I think happens is that there's just this general avoidance of the difficult conversations, partly because of the mythology of romance that, you know, everything should fall into place.
Yes. And this is so interesting, Hara, because now we're talking about the same theme in dating that we're talking about in relationships. We came to the same place. The person saying, I can't do that hard thing because it'll make the other person feel too bad. It'll make me feel too bad about myself. So I'm not going to do it. We're talking about the same theme, interestingly enough, in both places.
And, you know, I think there's another aspect to it. And absolutely, goodwill is important, but so is commitment. Having a sense of commitment to the very end, which means trying every remedy to repair the relationship. So sitting down and having that hard conversation, but instead what happens is you're home, or you're in your office and you've had a miserable night and a miserable argument, and you go online and it's so easy to just flip the switch onto a dating site and begin a conversation that's so easy and takes you down a path. And before you know it, you're out of the relationship.
I have chills hearing you say that because you're just speaking those words step by step of what happens for so many people.
Yeah, and people don't intend it, but you know, there's an emotional ease in online relationships. People don't, in a sense, really understand how emotions are operating in a vacuum there. And all of a sudden, that becomes more rewarding than one's home life.
Absolutely. It's kind of like porn. It's an idealized version of something that just doesn't carry any of the weight, the burden, the work, the challenge.
Right. And porn is another one often used as another one of those escapes from doing the work of a relationship. Well, here I can get what I want. I don't have to bother with a messy interaction with another human being. I'll just look, take care of my own needs, and I'll be a happier person in the morning.
Right, right, exactly, exactly.
But it's all the same thing. It's avoiding the difficulties and sidestepping them. And that's not really respectful of a partner.
No, and it's so interesting because in the case of dating that you talked about, and in the case of relationships, both of the escapes were online. All those escapes that you described in these particular cases were all online.
And I think that becomes sort of the basic exit ramp for relationships these days.
Well said. That's great. Yes. Yes.
Not that work and, you know, being at work every day doesn't also create opportunities. It creates lots of opportunities.
Absolutely true. Absolutely true.
Yeah. But if you have a commitment to a partner where I'm going to work on this thing until I have no more energy left, if you have that commitment, you don't even see alternatives. I mean, there are studies done that show that you're just not interested. People who have a commitment to a partner don't even notice when other people are coming on to them. It's really kind of interesting.
I love that. I love that. I'm in deep agreement. And now I'm thinking of two different things. I'm thinking of the issue of monogamy versus polyamory, but I'm also just thinking about sex. And I think I'm going to talk about, like, I'm going to ask you some questions about sex first.
Yeah.
So I know that you have talked to the top experts. You've talked to so many people who are in the trenches and dealing with these things. But I think another area of hard conversation is around sex. You know, and I think that online people can share, and these are always the two questions that I ask people to consider. What turns you on the most in sex? Really honestly admitting that. And also, what touches your heart most deeply and makes you feel the most safe in sex? Those are the big, big questions. And often it just feels too mortifying to talk about those things with our partners. But when we don't, we're headed down a ramp away from our extraordinariness as a couple. But those conversations are so hard. And I just would love to hear your thoughts about that issue. Couples finding a way to talk about sex in ways that allow them to really be authentic, vulnerable, and safe in bed.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm sitting here thinking about a woman who wrote to me in my advice column, who was not married, but was in a long-standing relationship of a couple of years and was no longer attracted to a partner and couldn't tell him because his hygiene was awful. And she was ashamed to tell him. I mean, shame permeates everyone's sexual needs.
Yes.
As if there's something weird and wrong with saying to someone. So imagine You're sleeping with someone for 2 years and you can't tell them to brush their teeth. I mean, what kind of weird universe is that?
Yes, it's so true. Or please touch me in this way, or don't touch me in this way. It's so exquisitely hard. And then when we don't do it, there's this kind of decline in magnificence in the couplehood.
Right. And admittedly, it's hard to do it in the heat of passion because there's the danger it's going to turn someone off if you start giving them directions.
Yes.
But it can be done in loving ways, by guiding hands, by touching places, and touching tentatively engaging response. I mean, again,
beautiful.
It's kind of trial and error. You want to try everything and be sensitive to what the response is, both verbally and nonverbally, and nerve endings, and how someone jumps, and positive reaction to it. There are a lot of ways to do it. And also, I mean, one can have an out-of-bed conversation too. But here's the other thing. I think that what goes on outside the bedroom reflects what goes on inside the bedroom.
Ain't it the truth?
And people have to be tender outside the bedroom. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they can't be tender and receptive inside the bedroom. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, oh, there's one set of operating instructions for the kitchen and another set of operating instructions for the bedroom.
I love that.
Yeah, life doesn't work that way. No. And so, and here's what happens. So when there's tenderness in all areas, you create a bank of goodwill, and a partner is willing to hear, I wouldn't frame it as a correction, but as gentle guidance as to what you need. And here's the message that everybody should have. Nothing, but absolutely nothing, is taboo if it doesn't hurt oneself or another or a partner. I mean, and there should be no shame about what one likes or what one wants. Sexual needs and interests are just so globally varied that I just wish everybody could drop their shame about what they want and say, hey, you know what? I really like this. Would you mind if we tried it? I mean, two people may not like the same thing, but it's certainly worth bringing up.
You know, one of the most wonderful stories that I remember around this exact subject, and by the way, what you said about creating that bank of goodwill was just stunning, stunning. It was great. So there's an author named Guy Kettlehack, whose work I really love. And he wrote a book called Dancing Around the Volcano. And it's about gay men's sexual lives. And there was this one person, this story just touched my heart so much. It was a guy who had a fetish for thin black dress socks. And he would not get turned on by guys unless they were wearing thin black dress socks. And he felt like a freak. He felt like a mutant, like he could never have a normal life in this world. And he talked about the person who kind of saved his life around that. It was someone he dated that he didn't end up staying with, but he just couldn't help himself because he loved this guy, the guy loved him, and everything was sinking because the guy wouldn't wear those, didn't know about the socks. So in a state of complete mortification, because he did not want to lose this opportunity, he told the guy that this is something that is like essential for him and really turns him on. And he said, I can never for the rest of my life thank this guy enough, because he just said, sure, let's get some. It was not a big deal. It wasn't his turn on, but he just, and that allowed them to be a couple. And that allowed him to do two things. One, embrace that part of himself. And two, because he didn't have to hold on so tight, that part could loosen up a little bit and became less absolutely required. But I just thought that was the most precious story that kind of captures this.
That is lovely. I also happen to know Guy Kettleheck. He worked for my late husband years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, the world is small.
That's amazing.
And what shame could there possibly be in thin black socks, I ask you?
Yes, such a metaphor.
Right. I'm going to have to remember that one, thin black socks, as thin a metaphor.
Thin black dresses, yeah.
Yeah, right, for all those kinds of things.
Right, and then for us too is kind of like just being more open and flexible with the things that are our partner's secret wants as well.
Oh, yeah. And there can be conversations, even in the heat of things, of, okay, tell me what you most want. Tell me what you've never told anyone before. I want to do what you most want to do. I mean, that's such a loving gift to give to somebody. Absolutely. How could it not be received wonderfully, embraced?
Yes. And this is why Gandhi said, love is the prerogative of the brave. Because it's hard and it's beautiful and it's love.
Right. And, you know, and it may be something that you are, for whatever reason, uncomfortable doing. It may not be, but if it is something you're uncomfortable doing, it's possible to have that conversation and say, you know, I know you like that. I'm not crazy about doing that. And you can switch off with other things that you like or that you both like, but you need to open up that area.
Beautiful, beautiful. It's a celebration. It's an invitation to a potential banquet that is also a metaphor for everything in relationships, right?
Like everything in relationships at every age, because if you're like me and you are dating after widowhood, you're meeting new people and new people have new interests and new likes and desires and wants and needs. And so it's an eternally ongoing conversation in life. And by the way, even if you're in one relationship for 60 years, needs and wants evolve. And there are just always new paths to intimacy.
Beautiful, beautiful. So, Hara, I want to jump into something else now that feels like to me, and I don't know if you've experienced the same thing in the last 15 years, it seems like couples are wrestling more with emotional affairs now than in the past. I don't know if you're experiencing that too, but whether you are or not, I do want to talk about emotional affairs.
Okay.
And how those, the effect of emotional affairs on relationships.
So tell me what you literally mean by emotional affairs.
Well, I think that in my work, I have seen more and more people talking about a profound sense of betrayal because people are engaging in non-sexual, almost kind of romantic intimacy, but not directly romantic, and definitely not sexual, but a deep sense of intimacy with other people of the gender that person is attracted to, and the kind of betrayal that people feel. And I've seen so many relationships break up because of emotional affairs.
So are you referring to emotional affairs that are happening online or in person in real life, or all of the above?
All of the above. Yeah. Yeah. Relationships in which Eros in its most general form, it's more
right,
like romance in its most general and non-specific form, is kind of cultivated. And there's a sense of deep, unique specialness between those two people that leaves the partner out.
Yeah, I think a lot of things are going on. I definitely agree that there's lots of this happening. And I think part of it is that ease of going online when there's a speed bump in a relationship. It's like, okay, I'm going to go online and look for something that's going to be rewarding. Or yes. I'm just going to fool around and you fall into something that's erotic and arousing, and it's just much easier than facing the issues in your relationship. But yeah. I also think that things are happening in person, and it's not all acts of commission, because I do think that there are really two sides of what's going on. I do think that people have unreal expectations of what love is, and there's almost a narcissistic need to have all the attention of one's partner, and I think that's really too demanding and unrealistic and can drive away a partner.
Yes.
So I think that one's definition is part of the problem, but I also agree that you hit a speed bump in a relationship and, you know, you begin to invest maybe a little bit too much, maybe don't draw the right boundary around your other relationships. And again, it's really all part of this general opportunity to avoid the difficult parts without penalty, or without obvious penalty at first.
Yes, so true. You know, I'm thinking of my training as a therapist, and the definition of crisis, and crisis is where you hit a challenge that you don't have the tools to handle. And what's amazing about crisis is we build the tools that we didn't have before. And in a way, we're saying that relationships experience constant crises, and those are opportunity points to build a new set of skills. And when we take the exit ramp, we don't get to build those new skills. And now I want to jump into the issue of polyamory and just hear your thoughts about monogamy versus polyamory. And I'll share my thoughts too, but I'd just love to hear your thoughts from the broad perspective on all different levels that you get to see.
Well, I certainly have been asked a lot more questions about polyamory in the past couple of years. And I can't speak from personal experience on this one, because I'm the last person to even want to be involved in a polyamorous relationship. It's just my nature. I jump in. I'm a 200%er. I jump into a relationship and fight for it to the end. And I'm happy to be in a relationship now, as I have been for the past couple of years. And polyamory just wouldn't even enter my mind. That said, it is entirely possible to love more than one person at a time. I mean, there's just no doubt in my mind. What one does with that love is a totally different thing. So here's what I'm hearing from people on the front lines and from relationship experts who really understand it, talk to people about it. And people in polyamorous relationships claim no jealousy, but jealousy winds up being a problem. I think there are a lot of people in polyamorous relationships where one partner wants it more than the other. So Yes. You have that asymmetry to start with. One tolerates it, one enjoys it or needs it. And the other thing is that there is a constant conversation going on in couples, in polyamorous relationships, that would exhaust the hell out of me. I just couldn't do it. Where they're constantly talking about their feelings and their feelings for this and their feelings for that and rebalancing it. I just could not be that self-absorbed, honestly, in a relationship. I would just throw up my hands and walk away from the whole thing because there are just other things that I need to get on with in life than spend all that time being so self-absorbed and negotiating the boundaries of all and juggling all these different relationships. So what I hear is that there's a lot of talk that goes on, a lot of energy. And while lots of people are thinking about polyamory, only 6% of people, at least in the U.S., engage in it. So as one of my sources told me recently for an article that I'm doing, the fact that lots of people are thinking about it and have a positive attitude towards it, are willing to accept it in others without censure, means that we're all kind of liberalizing our ideas about sex, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we want to choose that form of relationship for ourselves.
Very interesting.
What's your take?
Well, I have another question for you, and then I'll share with you my thoughts. But my other question is, so you said 6% of people in the States are engaging in polyamorous relationships. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What percent of people are having affairs?
Oh, my gosh. That's the statistic that's unknowable.
Right. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. What are the best guesses?
Well, it's really the unknowable because few people will confess to it.
Right. How about at the least?
I don't have the number off the top of my head, but at the very least, 20% of women, and the number of women is going up. Let me put it this way. Under like age 35, the number of women and the number of men having affairs is the same. And in fact, there's some evidence that more women than men are having affairs among the younger cohort. Among older ones, more men than women, but it's still about at least 20% of women. And I don't want to put my foot in my mouth and put a number on the number of men. Somewhere there's data, but as I said, the data are really totally unreliable on that topic.
Yes, that makes perfect sense. But it's a lot more than 6%.
Oh, a lot more than 6%.
Yeah, yeah. For me, Dr. David Schnarch's thought about the cauldron concept is one that the crucible concept is
right.
One that I really, really adore, which is that a crucible can actually bend steel because of the incredible amount of heat that it contains without leaking it out. And we are like steel that is not necessarily structured in the best way. And in a relationship, as Harvel Hendrick says, you end up in a place where the things you most need from your partner are the things they're least able to give you. And that's actually the beginning of deeper intimacy. But that means bending the steel of our characterological traits. And if the heat is leaking out by other relationships and other affairs where you don't have to, because you're getting those needs met that your partner can't meet in another place, then you will never have the contained heat to bend that steel. But that's an extraordinary couple that's willing to do that work. But that's an ideal that I aspire to.
Right. And David also talks about wall socket sex and sex with your eyes open. And these are really all important elements of a relationship when you're when you're really willing to do that work in the crucible and contain it in the relationship. And I think there's something about love. And here I'm really being driven by thoughts, personal thoughts. I think that when you come up against the limits of yourself and of another person and can love and respect someone in spite of it, that is when the sex gets electrifying, or can get. It's not going to be, sex isn't going to be electrifying every time out. Sometimes it's just going to be, you're doing it for relief, you're doing it to make your partner happy. But there are times when it's really electrifying for both, and you both know it.
Beautiful.
And it's when you really can accept the limits of the other person, grow within them, and give liberally and freely to each other.
Whoa. And that's the magnificent
thinking about
word.
That.
Right. That is just wonderful. That's wonderful. And Hara, in closing, I just want to ask you a question or two. One question I want to ask you is, if you could just, you've spoken with all the top experts, what's one thing that someone said in all of these decades of interviewing people that kind of at this moment you would say touches you most deeply? The insight that was given to you by a particular relationship expert that kind of went the deepest or hit you the hardest?
A couple of things. I think John Gottman's work has always been pretty important. And one of the things I've always liked about John's study of couples in a home-like laboratory, wired them up for days on end and watched them interact, is this idea of the so-called mindless moments of relationship, in that there are times when two people are together doing maybe their own separate thing. It's no special time. Mm-hmm. And one of them just calls another person's attention to something. Hey, look at that boat outside the window. And it sounds like nothing. But these mindless moments really are a kind of glue that holds couples together. And the other thing that John talks about, and you and I have talked about this a lot, is repair, repair, repair. Yeah. That everybody screws things up and you just stop and you say, you know, I'm sorry. And you repair the damage before it gets in and hardens the heart or turns someone's gaze elsewhere.
Oh, so beautifully said. Hara, thank you so much. This was just such an exciting journey and such a rich journey. And you are such an extraordinary person because of all the dimensions that you bring to this, including your own heart and your own life and your own story and your own experience. Is there anything that you want to say in closing?
Yeah, I think there's one thing I do want to say. And this really goes for everybody dating and looking for a partner. And people always ask me, what's the most important thing to look for in a partner? And I'm going to say the three most important things to look for in a partner are character.
Yes.
Is someone honest? Is someone kind? These are things that are going to affect the nature of your relationship far more than you can imagine. They're not sexy, but they are critically important. And if your partner is unkind to anyone, gratuitously unkind to anyone, dishonest to anyone, that's going to work its way into the marriage because those are character traits. and you're going to suffer terribly as a result. So save yourself some heartache. You're not going to change your partner on those things or in most other things either. And check out someone's values. Check out their kindness, their courage, their honesty. They're really important.
You are not kidding. Ain't that the truth? That is a fabulous note to leave with everybody. It's sobering, it's clarifying, and it's the bottom line. It's the highest, and it's also the ground. So thank you for that, and thank you for everything you shared, and I hope to have you back here again.
Oh, it's always so much fun talking to you.
Thank
you, Hara. Yes, the best questions.
That's great. That's great. So thank you so much, Hara. And everyone, thank you for listening. And stay tuned for the next episode of the Deeper Dating Podcast.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode of Deeper Dating. Be sure to go to deeperdatingpodcast.com as Ken has a few more gifts for you. Then join us on the next episode.